Hello and welcome to the Parent Teacher Podcast. This is episode one. This is going to be the worst one where I make all the mistakes. And fittingly, it is titled The Fear of Failure. And I am so grateful to my friend Isaiah for agreeing to come and get me started, just to get started. So we're going to start there. In a broad sense, I really wanted to start a podcast because in my work as a special ed advocate, I often try to bridge the divide between teachers and parents and just foster communication and build trust and get everyone on the same page so that we can help kids become successful adults. So my vision is to have discussions that bring information on the legal aspects and the initiatives and some of these, you know, cognitive concepts and best practice in teaching. And I hope to bring all of those to you. But today it was just about getting started. So thanks for listening. So my guest today, my very first guest, I chose carefully because it's Isaiah Maker, who I know as a local Oak Parker and business owner and entrepreneur. He's an OPRF alum as well. He was a member of their Spoken Word Club, which is something he's very passionate about. He has a degree in organizational and corporate communication from UIC. And he has a background in teaching spoken word with middle schoolers and high schoolers, college students, and corporate professionals. So Isaiah really fits this concept I have of having the full view of what it takes to be successful in adulthood and scaling that back to how we teach it and integrate it with younger kids. So welcome, Isaiah.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you share with us an example of a time where you had to overcome this fear of failure?
Okay, so ironically, I used to have the fear of public speaking. So I remember my freshman year at Oak Park River Forest High School, had this huge afro, believe it or not. And I remember walking into the classroom and noticing there are two instructors. Typically, there's one, but the other instructor that was in there that day announced that it's Poetry Week. And I'm like, what is Poetry Week? I've heard of Poetry Month, but I'm thinking this got to be something that's made up.
You're going to make a haiku?
So Poetry Week is pretty much a time where the instructor teaches the students poetic devices such as metaphors, similes, alliteration, hyperboles, and we're taught to create our own poems using these poetic devices, and then we have to share them come Friday. So my arms are folded, and my head is down. The worksheet is under my elbow. Notices I'm not, you know, paying attention. He says, you know, Isaiah, how come you're not doing the assignment? I said, I hate poetry, not joining the spoken word club. And for someone who is really soft-spoken, low self-esteem, low confidence at the time, he was kind of shocked that I said this to his face. And secretly, it was this fear of kind of putting myself out there and, you know, being judged of what I would say or how people would perceive me. So it wasn't really the fear of public speaking, but it was just this idea that public speaking, by doing that, you're going to get so much judgment casted upon you. And that's where the anxiety kicked in.
You're asking for it, right? Like, I think of recently, a lot of people have been reading, and so have I, Brene Brown, and that power of vulnerability. So anytime you're putting yourself at risk, right? Anytime you're expressing yourself and opening yourself up to feedback, you're taking a risk. Yeah.
So this is what I did after that day. Well, after that week. So what happened, I didn't mention what happened on that Friday. So everyone in the classroom had to share their poem. I'm the only one in the classroom who hasn't shared yet. There's like 5 minutes left in the classroom. So you know that moment where you're looking at the clock thinking you're going to be able to get out of class. So my head is kind of low. I'm trying to, like, how am I going to get out of here? And he calls on me, asks me to share my poem. And I lied and said I left my poem at home. But secretly, again, it was that anxiety. It's almost like this fear was my bully in a sense. And I wasn't ready to face that bully at the time. So I took a couple of years teaching myself how to write spoken word poetry, but not to become good at it, but to overcome this anxiety and this fear and this bully so that I don't have to, you know, have second thoughts about presentations or interacting with students, because I was strategically take certain hallways. Like, just so I wouldn't have to run into, like, the big crowds. And I hated going into the cafeterias. And I was like, man, I hate having to walk through school or just, you know, every day having to think, okay, how can I avoid talking or speaking? So again, after a couple of years of teaching myself how to write, believe it or not, I ended up walking into this instructor's office, the same one who I said, I hate poetry, don't want to join the spoken word club. And I wrote this long rap, to kind of show him that I've been teaching myself how to write. And, long story short, I ended up joining the spoken word club, performed in 4 showcases, and was a finalist for a poetry competition. So it turned into one of those things where I was building that, I guess, a muscle of being able to overcome this bully.
Yeah.
In a sense, and the more that I performed the guide in front of people, I was kind of strengthening that muscle. Before I realized it, the anxiety would still be there, but I knew how to manage it.
Yeah. The word I've heard you say repeatedly is avoid, 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 avoid. And yes. I think that really, if we want to think about how people deal with anxiety, one of the most common coping mechanisms is to avoid. And recently, anxiety is a huge issue for so many people, teenagers and adults these days are all talking about their anxiety. And recently I heard Lisa Damore had said, the problem with avoiding your fears is, like, let's say you're afraid of dogs. And so every time you see a dog walking down the street, you cross the street, you walk down the other sidewalk, she goes, well, how are you ever going to meet a nice dog? You know,
that's a really good point.
So I think that what I really admire in you is that you put yourself out there. Isaiah's tagline is make yourself known, which to make yourself known
vulnerable.
Is a really vulnerable position. You have to put yourself out there. And I think that the reason I wanted to pose this question as well is because I definitely focus on ADHD. And the idea of, like, why is it that some people are fine with putting themselves out there? Is it neurological? Is it that they're just more resilient by nature? They're wired that way? Or, you know, is it that they have what we call, like, this inoculation effect? Like, every time you face your fears and you overcome, or you fail and your life doesn't end, every time you put yourself in that position, it does build resilience, which I think you're a great example of, in that now you can walk to a corporate event and lead. And this is a kid who had his, I've seen the photo of the Afro on Facebook as well.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
awesome.
I forgot about that.
But I can picture this, like, quiet kid who has his arms crossed praying for the bell to save him in front of what? 16 other students, probably.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot. And you know what? Funny thing about the Afro, I think the hair element, I literally cut my hair about a few months after I performed for the first time. And it was, I think at some point after I did that, I realized, like, maybe I was kind of, you know, you kind of hide behind your hair or features and things like that. And I think I started unraveling these different layers that were holding me back from being authentic and making myself known. And it's because that anxiety, again, I wasn't fearful of that anymore. Like, I knew, you know, you get on stage, it happens. But again, because I knew how to manage it more, it was like, okay, come on, you know, bring it on, anxiety. Because now I know how to navigate it and fight that bully. But before I didn't know how to. So I would, again, avoid it.
Yeah.
But the moment I kind of confronted, I was like, oh, you're not as strong as I thought you were. So,
I think of, like, the movie It, right? Where
Clown movie?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, I just know it as the clown movie.
Well, and obviously, okay.
Not the movie, the book.
I mean, the book. I know that I loved the old movie. I saw the new one. But, you know, the idea, and this is a concept that I think gets repeated in a lot of things, is, like, the worst fear, like, the thing presents itself as everybody's worst fear. So for, like, one kid, it's a spider. For one kid, it's this creepy painting. For another kid, it's, like, her stepdad. For you, spoken word was your it. Like, there are probably a lot of things that cause people anxiety in high school. But you really, for some reason, just, like, picked this one out and then consciously thought, like, I'm going to beat it. I'm going to beat it down. And you've turned it into your strength.
And yeah, and honestly, that's what I realized, again, exercising that muscle. And when I was at UIC, I did research on how poetry can be used in the classroom to enhance and sustain student engagement. And public speaking was actually the number one fear amongst human beings.
Absolutely.
But you, again, though, I think it's not even necessarily the public speaking element. It's what public speaking, like the you putting yourself out there and you're thinking so much about what someone else is going to say. That's where the anxiety kicks in. You know what I mean? So it kind of paralyzes you and you start, you know, you start sweating, you start fumbling over your words. But it's not the public's, it's the it's that this idea of putting yourself out there. That's where the anxiety comes from.
Right. And so you brought up before, and I think that it's very relevant to right now, which is, it's interesting that I don't feel nervous right now. I had a really hard time getting started.
You noticed that?
Yeah, yeah.
Once, like, you're out there?
Once you've committed to, I'm going to do it, then I'm willing to go to every tool I have in my toolbox to, like, make it happen. One, invite somebody I feel really comfortable around and know is going to be easy to talk to.
And I crack some jokes. So humor helps, though, too. Cracking the jokes and all of that.
And the other thing would be, like, outside accountability. So I started telling people that I've worked with in the past, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to publish it. And then I thought, this is, like, now I'm going to be more embarrassed if I don't do it than if I do. So here's another device, right, is this idea of committing to it publicly, right, like having this sense of accountability. So those are some of the tools. This is just, like, a section from an article, but it's something where I'm thinking, like, some people just seem to be so much more sensitive to rejection. That's what I was wondering is, you know, are we wired that way? It's probably, I always think everything is a product of both nurture and nature, right? Like, we can overcome the nature sometimes, but what is it in place? And this comes from a friend who sent me an article, and the term is rejection sensitive dysphoria. And even in coaching college students and working with student teachers, you can tell getting feedback. That's what we were talking about, right? It comes back to, like, you're putting yourself out there to get feedback from somebody. And as humans, we are always going to internalize and hear the negative so much more strongly than all the positive feedback. If you give a workshop and people turn in their form and one person says, I didn't like the way he did this, you walk out and the one you're going to remember is that negative piece. But I'm going to quote from this article. And I will cite it later. This is from the website Attitude, which I love. And it says, the emotional response to the perception that you have failed, or even the fear of failure, is catastrophic for those with this condition, rejection-sensitive dysphoria, which occurs a lot in ADHD. This is me ripping. The term dysphoria means difficult to bear. And most people with ADHD report that they can hardly stand it. They are not wimps. Disapproval hurts them much more than it hurts neurotypical people. And so I'm like, you know, if this is true, does it explain why, you know, we talk about temperament, why some people can be gregarious, or I'll go first. Like, who was the person in your class that was like, I got it, I'm going to go first?
I get what you're saying.
And, you know, what made you the one sitting back? And so, you know, I always think knowledge is power. And when I work with...
What's this?
Oh, a notification from my calendar, which is a tool I use. I wonder, you know, what tools that maybe we've talked about and what knowledge could we impart on kids and individuals to be self-aware, right? And then that might help them to push through, right? And work on those muscles. So I think for me, part of it is acknowledging that it's harder for you. You're not a wimp. You're not less than someone else. You're not less than someone else because you have more fear of failure. But I think what I hear you saying is, like, do everything you can to not let this define you. Like, you have to work harder at
this. I think it's perception shifting as well. So something with me being a spoken word guru, I guess we can say that.
Yeah, okay, you can be guru. We'll add it to your intro.
I mean, like, some of these words that we use, they're so, you know, they trigger so many different emotions and they cripple our perception or our thoughts. And, you know, saying things like, let's say a student, perfect example, and I hate when students do this, when they write the first draft of their poem, it's like, can you check on my poem? I know it sucks already, but And I try to stop them. I was like, well, why do you think it sucks? You know, I kind of ask them a lot of questions. And what they're trying to do, it's almost like they're trying to reject it first, just in case I do it. You know what I mean? So that, I don't know, I don't know if it makes them feel more comfortable. So if I say, oh yeah, this does suck, yeah, I already know. But it's like this protection thing. Let me say these negative things first.
It's an afro.
Yeah,
let me like bring this to your attention right now.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. And then I tell them, I was like, honestly, I was like, working with me, I don't want you all to ever say something sucks or this is bad or all these negative things. It's like, how is this going to help you grow or help you improve? Remember, this is a rough draft.
Right.
Imagine a baby being born and you're saying all these negative things. Let the baby grow. Like, let it breathe. Like, let it crawl. Let it learn how to walk. Like, that's what we're doing to ourselves. We're rough drafts, too. But we should look at that as an opportunity to kind of edit ourselves. And sometimes a lot of people just look at themselves as rough drafts and think it's permanent. But you have to have this open mindset. So instead of saying it sucks, you could say like, oh, well, this is my first draft. I'm still looking at ways in which I can improve it. But these labels, you calling it suck, it doesn't improve. What is the return on investment of you calling it these negative things? You have to evaluate that.
Well, and you know what you're talking about is really, and it's become maybe a little too buzzwordish.
I already know what you're going to say. I guess
is fixed versus growth mindset.
Yep, I
right?
Yeah.
But there's so much validity in this, because the reason I think we fall into this thinking, and I mean, I can do 7 episodes on anxiety and 9 more on perfectionism. But it's because we're rewarding a final product and we're not really reinforcing and rewarding being brave. You know, being really putting yourself out there and being brave. Like, we're not rewarding them by saying, yeah, okay, there's going to be a lot of work to do here, but this is so awesome that you got started. And like, let's move on from here, because that's really the hardest part, is getting started.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you said. We always focus on the negative, but it's like you did a rough draft. Like, you completed a rough draft. At least acknowledge that. Also acknowledge the fact that there's always a journey. So what did you learn from the process of you creating this rough draft? What were some takeaways? So it's like, it should be more so about what did I learn, opposed to, again, oh, either I failed or I succeeded. And I think, again, these words, it makes you either go all the way left or all the way right.
But what about
in between the left and right?
Well, and the learning. Absolutely. The vocabulary we use is so important, right? Because I think of the other words that we brought up, which is feedback. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, feedback itself. And then if we think again about this fear of failure, it's a fear of rejection is what it is. So I think of the stereotype of like getting the paperback with red ink all over it, right? Like, you get all the red ink. And like, I've had this problem. I've really struggled as a professor, and I've told student teachers, you know, I feel like I want to give you all of this like constructive criticism because I want you to be there. You're so close. I want to just tell you like it is, like, fix this part, fix it. You were almost there. What about this? But then what I perceive on the other end of it is that you're just seeing all of these areas that need improvement. But I'm like, I don't want to clutter it with all of this, like, great job. Oh, this is so nice.
Oh,
like,
you're talking about, you know what they call those? The shit sandwiches? Where you say something good, then you say
sandwiches.
And then incorporate, they call it the shit sandwich. Because you're saying these positives, you're saying positive, then you talk about all the things that they need to change, and then you try to end it with another positive.
So I wonder if we wanted to do somebody the favor, if we wanted to work with kids and make them less afraid of failure, right? And less afraid of rejection and more willing to do the brave thing, which is just get it in so we can look at it and see where we're at, right? Then maybe it should be this conversation of, okay, you're going to turn it in and you don't need to tell me it's crap, because what we're going to do is look at it together and figure out, okay, now where do we learn from here?
So, yeah. So again, it ties into it's funny. It all comes down to the wording, because it's funny. The actions stay the same, but it's how you word it is going to shift your perception of the action itself. So it's really, honestly, I mean, teaching does require some coaching skills, because if you're saying these things, you know, you're saying, you know, the big red X's and all this other stuff, the student is going to perceive that as like, oh, I suck, I this, I that. But no, actually talking with them through this journey, it's like, I see you started off with here, like, and then also asking the questions too, asking questions opposed to saying, oh, you did this wrong. You, because imagine right. saying that to a child, right. a middle schooler. All they're going to hear wrong. They see the X's and all these negative emotions are going to kick in. And then it's going to make them fearful of feedback. But let's say if you shift it and you make it as a learning journey, a learning experience. I mean, what kid doesn't want to learn or doesn't love to learn? So then it's going to, I'm coming back with my next draft because I learned so much from that previous one. But it always is going to come down to the wording. It's really going to come down to that.
And I think what you're explaining to also, it leads us to, like you said, coaching, right? And I think mm-hmm. that if you are explicitly telling kids, everyone feels vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Everyone feels anxiety when we're pushing ourselves to do something that's a challenge for us. But it's mm-hmm. the only way we grow. And mm-hmm. so today we're going to grow. And that's, again, I realize a lot of the growth mindset stuff, but just shifting it around in the way that we deliver the feedback so that mm-hmm. it's maybe posing the question to them. How might you incorporate more evidence in this part? Or,
right. Asking them, yep.
And then also, I think having these honest dialogues with kids where you reinforce when they put themselves out there, where you acknowledge, and I really do think like validating people's feelings. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, a lot of people will feel very fearful and anxious mm-hmm. put in this situation. And the only way to improve that is by practicing. So we're going to practice. Mm-hmm. You're gonna practice.
It's just repetition, and yeah, just reinforcing that muscle analogy. And I wonder how many teachers, and I don't know if I've done this or even you have done this, but when you're sitting and giving them feedback, also relating it back to your own experience with feedback. Like I remember when I was with my rough draft, and I would, be somewhat kind of depressed or upset about putting this humanizing element again, kind of showing them like I've gone through this process as well. So I understand how this can be frustrating. But again, this is to help you grow. I remember my first draft was blah, 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 blah. Wasn't the best thing. But then gradually, as I became more open to feedback, I saw my grade shift from this to that.
The educational term for this is modeling. Right.
Yeah.
When you, yep. yeah, definitely. Or think aloud is another technique we use. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna wrap it.
Oh yeah, wrap it with a bow.
Okay.
Are you gonna do a rap? Like rap a spoken word thing? Or?
Not yet. Oh, eventually, no. I might push myself to grow. And yeah. I don't know that anyone wants me to go in that direction. To be honest.
Well, this was a good first step. We'll get there.
Yeah, we got one done. That's what we did today. It went a little long. Was it perfect?
Yeah.
No.
But you
was
know
it crap?
What though?
No.
You know, edit and tweak. There's a lot of gems that we dropped in here too, like some gold nuggets. So,
all right. So, always, I want to wrap up really briefly with how could what we talked about today look or be understood, one at home or one at school and two at home? And I guess I would say it comes down to the language we use mm-hmm. and the message we send when kids are trying, and really in being sensitive about that feedback. Mm-hmm. And I also think validating feelings and acknowledging that mm-hmm. it might be really hard to hear negative feedback, but that it's going to get
easier. It's all about learning, yep.
Yeah, all right. I think that's it. So thanks very much.